It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. For the first time in a decade, the American Academy of Pediatrics is out with a new literacy promotion policy statement with updated recommendations on how pediatricians and caregivers can encourage early childhood literacy starting at birth.
The statement also highlights the work of Reach Out and Read. That's a national organization which helps incorporate the importance of reading to children as part of their checkups.
Our next guest is a Wisconsin pediatrician who's a contributing writer for the new literacy promotion policy by the American Academy of Pediatrics.
Dr. Dipesh Navsaria is a professor of pediatrics and human development and family studies at UW-Madison. He is founding medical director of Reach Out and Read Wisconsin and the current chair of the American Academy of Pediatrics Council on Early Childhood. Dr. Navsaria, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, as always.
You helped write this new literacy promotion policy for the American Academy of Pediatrics. First update in 10 years. You know, this statement really hones in on this term shared reading. Can you explain for us what is shared reading?
Yeah, so this is a way of just expressing good old sitting down and reading with your child or a child in your life in whatever way, shape, or form. It highlights that reading, especially with young children, should not necessarily be a solitary activity. Like, let's not just push books at children and say, hey, just go look at books, kid, you know, figure it out on your own. That it's fundamentally a relationship-based activity, that it's something that should be shared between a parent and a child, or again, with any loving adult in their life.
And what I really loved about reading with my kids, still read to them, it's not past tense here, but, I could be animated and, use inflection, and I could really catch their little ears with, like, the range in my voice and with question marks and characters. Does that passion rub off?
I think it definitely does. And actually, you've hit the nail on the head, because for folks like you or I who have been around people who read to young children, we naturally automatically absorb a lot of these things about making different voices or asking the child questions about what they can find on the page and doing this back and forth. This is the fancy term for this is something called dialogic reading. But, if you've not been exposed to this, you may think that a young child is supposed to sit quietly and just be read to, and whatever's on the page is exactly what you do. And I think you and I both know that that doesn't work so well with a short, naturally short attention span, squirmy 15-month-old, for example.
How influential can pediatricians be in promoting this type of engagement, this reading, when, that little baby is sitting in your office?
Very much. So the Reach Out and Read program, which I've worked with for many years, it's a program that's been around for 35 years, provides training and technical assistance to healthcare providers in implementing advice and guidance about shared reading as part of those regular checkups that we're all familiar with, 14 visits starting at birth all the way up through age five. We know that pediatricians and our colleagues in family medicine, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, anyone who's doing primary care for children, we work with them to train, hone, help them ask gently and supportively as part of that checkup about shared reading, reinforce what families are already doing well, telling them, yep, you got it, keep doing more of that, please, or to spend time with them saying, wow, you said you feel like your child doesn't like reading. Can we talk about that some more? What are you noticing? What are you seeing? And offering some troubleshooting so that shared reading becomes a daily part of every child's life, every single day, ideally.
The new recommendations include reading to children starting at birth, even perhaps in the neonatal intensive care unit, rather than waiting until they're a 6 month old. What can you tell us about what infants may be absorbing in these interactions so early on?
Yeah, this is something that surprises people, because they say, what can a child learn at that point in time? The old report, the old statement said, start at 6 months, and we've now backed that all the way back to birth, because there's so much evidence, not just about the things that have to do with reading, right? How do you turn pages in a book, and how do you learn to eventually recognize letters and words and sentences and things like that. But there's a whole other thing that, honestly, Reach Out and Read has been doing all along, but we didn't have the language for it yet, is something we call relational health. This is a field of study that's been exploding in so many areas. This is the study of relationships and how strong and supportive and mutually reinforcing they are. And when you do good shared reading all the way from the early days of life, you're also contributing not just to early literacy, but to early relational health, which is just as important. So when a child is in your lap and they're hearing your voice, they're hearing the cadence of sentences, when they're hearing the love, they're feeling your touch, you're doing something together, all of these play into that child and really feed their development in ways that absolutely nothing can. We need to remember there is no toy. There is no video. There is no app that will drive development forward on its own. It's nurturing, caring, responsive interactions with others. So we're hoping that we can help build some of those through regular shared reading experiences.
The reality may be that we have devices in our hands seemingly all the time, you know, checking the phone, checking an app. And that has to be set down in these times. I'm wondering, you know, the new recommendations expressly say that the print books are better than digital books for young children. Can you go into that? Why is that?
Mm-hmm. Sure. And I'll just start off by saying, yes, as I once heard someone say, and I think it's apt, there is no app to replace your lap. So let's keep that in mind.
Oh, I love it. That should be a bumper sticker.
Indeed. So, the print books, we find that the turning of paper pages, the fact that there's not other distractions in a paper book that can exist on electronic devices, make them a better choice to do paper books rather than ebooks. Now, I want to be really clear about something. If a family says to me, hey, look, we're out and about with young kids the whole day, and if we have some downtime, we're pulling out an iPad and we're looking at, you know, one of the 40 picture books that I have loaded on that iPad, I'm not lugging around a pile of 40 books. The iPad is much lighter and easy to carry. Of course, that's absolutely fine. But if you have a choice, I would say yes, go for the traditional paper books rather than ebooks, just because the evidence is pretty strong that we should be actually focusing on the paper books.
What do you think about repetition? What is the impact of reading the same book over and over and over to that young kiddo?
So when a child asks for that same book over and over, and yes, I have a memory of reading, I think, Sandra Boynton's Dinosaurs Binket to my son something like 30 times on a flight to Hawaii when he was
little. It wasn't Pat the Bunny?
No, it was not. But that child is telling you a couple of things. One, they love the book, something about it. And with a young child, you know, we don't always know as adults why a particular book appeals to a particular child. We do know that the more beautifully written, the more amazingly illustrated, the more narrative depth and complexity that there is there, the greater the chance that it will connect with a child on some level. So we need to keep that in mind, but who knows sometimes. But number two, they're saying, I love it when you read this book aloud with me and share it with me. And I want to do that. It's not just about the book. It's also about you and expressing again that relational health there, which I think is so key. I want to point something out, though, that, you know, we can all sit here and say, oh, yes, isn't that lovely, right? That kids love being read to and they ask for the same book over and over and over. And we all smile and kind of, you know, treasure that memory. I once had a parent who asked me, after we were discussing shared reading for a little bit in a checkup, he said, Doctor, can I ask you, is my son's brain normal? And I said, well, yeah, as far as I can tell, everything looks fine. I have no concerns. Why do you ask that? And he said, well, he keeps asking for the book to be read over and over, and I'm wondering if he has a memory problem and that he's not remembering it. Right? So this thing that we treasure had deeply worried him. And I'm so happy that he had the trust to bring up this fear and that we could address it right then and there. So we sometimes need to remember these treasured moments aren't necessarily read the same way by everyone.
We're talking with Dr. Dipesh Navsaria, professor of pediatrics and human development and family studies at UW-Madison. He helped write the new early childhood literacy promotion policy for the American Academy of Pediatrics. First update in 10 years. Dr. Navsaria, the policy presents evidence that children's literacy skills at school entry and in kindergarten and first grade often predict their later reading success, and that poor reading skills in adulthood are associated with poor economic potential. How do you find literacy to be a determinant of economic outcomes?
Oh, gosh, it's so significant. The universe of meaningful careers available to people who can't read is shrinking every year that goes by. Even jobs that were once amenable to folks who may have poor literacy have changed. I mean, look at cars, right? They're basically rolling computers today. They're no longer these purely mechanical entities and so on. So when we don't build good literacy skills early on, we're actually affecting someone's entire life course.
What do you want policy leaders, policy recommendations to come out from this report? Because there can be actions at the state level, there can be actions nationally. What is some guidance there?
Yeah, so I think there's a few things. One is to recognize that when we talk about building literacy in children, it's not simply about the classroom. So there's been lots of discussion and conversation and news and legislation about reading instruction. And that's fine and that's important. And I'm glad that we're talking about that. But I also need policymakers to recognize that before reading instruction even starts, there's a whole 5 years plus of a child's life in which comfort with books and shared reading and experiences also matter. So an extremely cost-effective evidence-based program like Reach Out and Read can help, because many children aren't necessarily in settings like early childhood education in preschools and so on, but they are coming in for checkups. And that's why we take that opportunity in healthcare to have these conversations. We are grateful that we do get some state funding and have in the last two state budgets. And here's fingers crossed for the next one. We'd love to see federal funding for Reach Out and Read. There was once upon a time, and we'd love to see that return. To recognize that this is a very low cost, very effective intervention. We don't actually pay doctors to do this work. We're actually throwing them in for free. All the dollars for Reach Out and Read really go to training, technical assistance, and to buying the books that make a difference. But without that training and technical assistance, we're simply a book giveaway program on its own. And the reality is that Reach Out and Read is actually secretly a parenting support program.
What type of training is most beneficial to encouraging these new parents and caregivers to read? Because what if a parent has low literacy skills and perhaps is feeling doubt in themselves and not feeling that confidence in reading?
Oh, you hit it right on the head there, because people often think that the problem is an information gap, that if we just told parents to do, you know, X, Y, or Z, then that's all, right? And the fact is that many parents have already heard that. They've heard about read, talk, sing, play with your young child. There's a skills gap. How do I read to my squirmy, you know, toddler who doesn't pay attention? And how do I engage them with that thing we talked about earlier called dialogic reading? And then also the confidence gap, right? There's parents sometimes with lower educational attainment who think, you know, I'm the wrong person to be teaching my child. You know, I didn't do so well in school myself. I'm going to mess them up. Maybe this learning DVD is better for them. And of course it isn't. But so the training we do with families is to ask about shared reading, reinforce what they're doing right. When they mention that, oh, my child doesn't seem to enjoy reading, you know, take out the book we just gave them and ask them to read a few pages and offer some quick tips, do some modeling, some coaching. We can do this very effectively in as little as just 3 minutes, and also do a lot of assessment of the child's development and other things about their life, which we should be doing as part of that checkup anyway. So there's many things we're able to incorporate in there.
How important is it when it comes to representing diverse cultures in books and the child, you know, seeing themselves in that character or looking like a character in the book? What effect does that have on that young mind?
Yeah, this is important because there's a concept out there called mirrors and windows that has been talked about in different places. One, children should see themselves reflected, but they should also see other people's lives reflected in different ways, experiences that they just might not otherwise have in their daily lives. It can be about, you know, global cultures. It can be about, you know, rural and urban. It can be about different types of experiences, different makeups of families, different types of jobs that people have, right? This diversity comes in all sorts of forms. So it's a important thing to make sure that we're thinking about that and offering both representation as well as respectful and reasonable depictions of other people's worlds and lives.
There's a lot for a pediatrician to juggle in these visits, so many things that they're trying to watch out for and to look at and make sure everything is up to date. How receptive are pediatricians to this added layer of trying to engage with the family on a really important thing? Because there is a lot on the plate of that pediatrician.
There is, but the thing is that we've found that they really, really want to do this. When we talk to clinicians about Reach Out and Read, they say, yes, this gets at what my families need. There's sometimes some worries about, well, will I really have the time to do this? But once they've been through our training, and once we offer some technical assistance and guidance around how to incorporate this, they realize this. When I do talks to trainees, we play a recording of a Reach Out and Read visit, and then we talk through all the things we learn about the child's development, about family structure, about what they do together, about relational health, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then I point out, after we've made this long list of all the things we've learned that we're supposed to be doing anyway, I point out that that entire video lasted 3 minutes. Mm. It's a really good use of 3 minutes. And it occurs when the clinician walks in with the book in their hand, gives it directly to that child and watches what happens, watches their response, watches, do they toddle over to their parent and hold it out in that read to me gesture? Do they start turning pages? Do they start saying words? You learn so much in those few moments by doing skillful and intentional observation that honestly, I learn more from that book in most checkups than I do from my stethoscope.
Dr. Nafsaria, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Dr. Dipesh Nafsaria is a professor of pediatrics and human development and family studies at UW-Madison. He hosts the national Reach Out and Read podcast, and he contributed to the new literacy promotion policy statement from the American Academy of Pediatrics that encourages parents and caregivers to read aloud with their newborns and young children. The policy statement is published in the new issue of the journal Pediatrics.